This is Mind for Survival with your host, Brian Duff.
Hey everyone, I'm Brian Duff, and welcome to another week here on the Mind for Survival. In today's episode, I am speaking about some fundamental things that we need to look at, take care of, lean into, in order to make sure that we are set up as well as possible, as best as possible, to survive, to thrive, to live this great life, but being ready and being prepared to overcome some difficult events that come down the road. And to do that today, before we get into it, what I would like you to do is, and don't do this if you're driving the car right now, obviously, but I want you in a minute here to close your eyes and imagine going through this, and we'll see. So imagine that you have a few extra minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes during the day, and you have to go to the grocery store to get some stuff that you forgot that, you know, got used up. You haven't been able to get it, but man, you really need to get this stuff and get squared away. And you're all excited because, hey, you got this free 30 minutes. So off you go. And it was supposed to be a quick run to the grocery store now, right? Just 30 minute stops, like I said. And suddenly, your phone blows up. Text, calls, and then an emergency alert kicks in. And it's that thing that's worried you. This is not a test. One of those things that you worry, that's why you prepare. Like, you know, that one. Close your eyes. What is that one? Think about it. What's that one thing or one of the things that you prepare for? Well, that's the one. It's happened. And it's happening right now. And guess what? You're the person who's into preparedness. You're the person that says, hey, you know what? That's probably a good idea to have an extra few days of food on hand. And eventually that turned into a week of food on hand. And depending on where you are on your preparedness journey, maybe you got years worth of food now. But whatever that thing is, that's happening right now. That thing that bugaboo that you're doing all the prepping for, that's happening right now. And you have to act and act swiftly. People are depending on you. What do you do? What do you do in the next few moments? Whatever it is that you decide to do, that may determine whether at the end of this day or whenever this thing is over, what you do right now is going to determine whether you're relieved and grateful at the end of the day. Woo! That was a close one, man. Or is it going to leave you rocked by the worst day of the rest of your life? That thing happens. Your heart races. You're trying to make a decision. But you know what? Your thoughts scramble. Stunned by the terror in your body. That's what you feel. Fear, terror at the fear, the terror at the prospect of the loss and failure involving you and your loved ones. As you're thinking about, Mike, what do we have going on here? What do I do? Screams from within your mind. I'm the one who's decided I'm going to be more prepared. Well, I need to be able to do something. And it's your answer to the, what do I do right now? It's that answer that can save the day. That outside of luck is likely to determine whether you succeed or failure. Like, hey, this thing is happening. Someone needs to do something right now. I'm the one that's in the preparedness. Okay, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to see. But it's what you do right now in the heat of the moment. That's likely, if that's what you're acting on, that's likely to determine whether you succeed or fail. And if you've read the book, what do you get in my book? That the sympathetic nervous system response that kicks in when there's something major happening, whether it's a disaster, an event of life, whatever. When that kicks in, man, it can really make it difficult to make a good decision, right? It's really hard. But fortunately for all of us, because we're listening to this as at a minimum preparedness-minded people, you're at a minimum, you're listening to a podcast trying to go, hey, I don't want to be prepared for the next thing. Even if that next thing's, if you're just starting out and you're like at 3 days or a week's worth of food, or you're way down the food chain of getting food together. It's preparedness that gives you the best chance to correctly answer your what do I do now question when it comes up. When the world's going crazy, or your life is going crazy, or someone that you care about's life is going crazy, or it's about to go crazy because there's a out of control bus coming down the road. You having the answer to what do I do now and executing on that. That's where the preparedness, you know, that's what we're shooting for. That's what we're trying to earn the right to have that break in our favor and in our success. And people who prepare hash through the possible struggles that we may face in life ahead of time. That's what you're doing here. They gain knowledge. You gain knowledge. You learn skills. You gather resources. So that you are as prepared as possible to respond effectively when someone's in need. You're in need, someone else is in need, your local community's in need, your family's in need, whoever. And because you make an effort, and because others in our preparedness community make the effort to face what worries us, what worries you, you are more likely and more ready to handle the curveballs that come our way. Yeah, we have them individually. We have curveballs thrown at us. Sometimes we have our local neighborhood has a curveball thrown at us. Individually, maybe it's a job loss. Maybe it's somebody, you know, gets sick, something like that. Who knows? Knock on wood. As a family, we might have what happened in the neighborhood. The crime rate went up. You know, as you keep expanding that community of like-minded people and geographical communities and stuff like that, we all get curveballs thrown our way. And if it's a curveball that's coming at our community or our society, wherever we're at with that, is that's still a curveball that's affecting us. And we don't need to be ready for it. We should be ready. We should do what we can to be as ready as possible for that, so long as we can live our best lives without going down the rabbit hole of doing everything, spending every waking minute to prepare for tomorrow that may not happen. But it's still a good idea to prepare. After all, emergencies don't announce themselves politely. Instead, they can strike without warning, leaving the unprepared stunned, panicked, and helpless to those who need it most. Your survival shouldn't rely on luck. Preparedness and survival are about knowing the crucial things you must know, developing the essential skills you need, and having the right resources along with an effective mindset to respond decisively when life goes sideways. That's what we're doing all this for. That's why we're going to get into this. Hey, what are the things that you need to do to survive? It's just not, you know, hey, survive the asteroid strike. We're going to be getting into a holistic view of what do you need to do to survive, right? What do you need to do? Because once you survive, then it's how do we manage our risk? Then it's how do we live our best life? It sets us up for everything and includes everything at all those phases. And that's what this is going to cover. This episode is going to walk you through the seven essentials that will help you get prepared so that you can answer the what do I do now question. It's a question that, because of your preparedness, though, you'll answer with clarity, confidence, and control. You'll be all over it because that's what we're doing here. We're thinking about the stuff. We're getting ahead of the game. We're prepping our OODA loops and all that. So that's what we're going to talk about. And where does that start off with? the first thing that you need to make sure that you have squared away, number one, is the foundation of survival. And when it comes to survival, new people, new to the whole preparedness world, often think about gear and supplies first. What do I need, right? I don't have any food. How much do I need? Tell me what kind of light I need. That's what you're thinking of. I need some stuff. I think that happens to most people. Now, while those supplies matter, they're not your strongest asset. True preparedness starts within you. It begins with your mindset and your ability to clearly see and understand what's happening around you. Mindset that sets the stage. And this is my drumbeat, right? I say it all the time. Mindset sets the stage for effective situational awareness. And together, mindset and effective situational awareness, right? They fuel smart, confident decision-making. And smart decision-making is super critical because it's the decisions we make that lead to the actions we take. So when we do something that we screw up or we do something right, that all comes out of whether or not we made a good decision or a bad decision. So where does everything start with? And if you've read the Mind for Survival book, you know off the bat, and most of you have listened to me for a while, so you get it too, is mindset is the most powerful thing that people must have to survive, to lead a great life, to do the best we can. You need good mindset. When we have a bad mindset, things aren't so great, right? When people talk about preparedness, they often jump straight into, as I said a minute ago, discussing gear and how you get better and how, it ends up being, hey, make sure you have this gear and then you better be ready now or it'll be too late. Right? That's kind of how the conversations quite often go, especially when people are new to preparedness. Hey, here are the things you need to get, and you better get them now because you never know what's coming. It might hit tomorrow. We're right in the middle of something's going on. I guarantee you that's something. Right? Again, I say I've heard that going all the way back to the late 80s when I really started going, hey, there's a whole bunch of people out here to do this. And you start listening to people. It's like every 6 months or maybe every couple of years, it was, hey, that thing's coming and we're all done for in 6 months. And then we weren't done for. So, that's usually how it goes. What kind of gear? And then this is how we're going to be done for. Better get prepping. And you're way behind the power curve. So go home and buy all that gear today. And yes, gear matters. We obviously need our essentials. So I'm going to cover some of that. But your most valuable survival tool isn't something you can buy in your store. You can't go somewhere and get it. They don't sell it at Walmart. It's your mindset. I've seen it firsthand over and over again through my life. Your mindset is the foundation upon which everything else rests. Everything you own can be lost, destroyed, damaged, and you're having to start over from scratch, but you still have your mindset. That's still there. It might be banged up. You might need to work on it a bit, but it's always with you. And it's always with you when you need it most. You can always rely on it. That's why it's great to work on. Great to stay in tune with. Hey, what's going on with me today? And cultivating mental and emotional resilience comes through mindset, right? And it's complicated. It takes work. It's part of preparedness. We might be getting groceries, carts full of stuff we need, but we also need good mindset. Are we paying attention to that? And again, since it's our most foundational, it doesn't cost us anything. That's the one we can really work on, do a lot of work on, right? Whether that's reading like a Tony Robbins book, whatever, something that forces you to think about how you look at the world, how you interact with the world, right? It's about being introspective, staying calm under pressure. Mindset helps you with that. It's about maintaining a perspective as perspective of free of a view on life as possible. Having your perspective align as close with reality as possible. Maintaining that awareness of the world is huge. And believing in your strengths, your well-balanced ability to face whatever challenges come your way. If you start with your mindset, everything else gets a whole lot easier. What follows mindset, right? The M4S, mindset, situational awareness, then survival. After mindset, we have situational awareness. And what is situational awareness? It's the observe and orient phase, the first half of John Boyd's OODA loop. And what was the OODA loop? It was a decision-making process. It was go out and gather the information. He discussed how do you gather your information. And then he talked about how that feeds into your decision-making process. That's what the OODA loop is. So situational awareness is your ability to not only detect what's happening in your personal environment, but also have an accurate understanding of whatever that is that's happening, right? You need to be able to detect it. It's like, if you look at the 5 D's of home security, right? What's the first D is deter. Like, you don't need to detect someone that's been deterred and doesn't try to get on your property to cause problems. But when they're not deterred, you need to detect them. If you don't detect them, then they can do whatever they want. So situational awareness is our ability to detect things. Do we notice, whether with our subconscious or our conscious minds, do we notice that something is happening in our personal environment? And our personal environment can be, hey, do I have a friend that lives all the way across the country that I care deeply about? Well, then, yeah, that's my part of my personal environment. That's the environment that affects me. You know, it might be something in the town or the city that I live in that, you know, irritates me or makes me happy. And if I have people in different places or there's other things that you care about, well, that's your personal environment. And so your situational awareness applies to all of that. How, where, and in tune are you with the things that matter in your world, matter to your safety, matter to your Maslow's hierarchy of needs or to the survival pyramid, right? So if you're able to detect it, then what does that mean? It means you can gather more information about that. You can make decisions on it. So again, since situational awareness and decision-making, it's a process that starts with, do you detect the information? If you don't detect the information, you can't do anything about it. If it's an opportunity, you can't seize it. And if it's a risk, you can't do much to avoid it unless it's by happenstance. So once you understand what's happening in your personal environment, right, then you're able to have a more and hopefully increasingly more accurate understanding of whatever is going to happen now and in the future, right? You can start seeing, hey, 2 and 2 equals 4. Well, if you know that's always going to be true, then you also know that when a lit match hits a rag soaked in gasoline laying out on the ground, there's a good chance it's going to catch that on fire. Well, it's the same thing as 3 guys with ski masks and guns go breaking into a liquor store. You probably know what's going to happen next. There's going to be a robbery and something going on. So situational awareness allows us, once we know something's happening, to then take whatever it is happening in the orient phase of situational awareness and put 2 and 2 together to figure out, oh, this is what's probably coming down the road. By going and doing training, by thinking through things, by listening to myself talk on my podcast, by listening to the YouTube channels, by listening to the guys over on the Casual Preppers and Prepping 2.0, all the different podcasts out there. What are you doing? You're priming your OODA loop. You're priming your observe and orient phase. You're gathering that information. So when something does happen, you go to answer that, what do I do question, where, oh, I don't have any knowledge. I haven't ever thought about what I do in response to, you know, my greatest fear, or I thought very little about it, or I thought in completely emotional terms, not something that will actually work. You've already gone through that. So your answer to the what do I do is like, oh, I've already examined all these different possibilities, all these different resources, how this interacts and how that interacts. I chewed on it for 5 minutes here while I was driving to work sitting in my commute. I thought about it for 10 minutes there. And over time, I've put a little bit of time into thinking about this. So when something happens, I have my answer, right? My answer to the what do I do question comes out is the actions you take at the bottom of the OODA loop. So situational awareness is great because you can work on it so that way you're alert even to things that aren't normally picked up, and not by having to be overly paranoid about everything or anything, but just because you notice the subtle differences that happen throughout people, society, your family group, you're in tune with it and you're able to understand what's going on. You know when you might have a little bit too much of a personal bias injecting into your perspective. So all that, what does that all mean? It means you have the ability to dial up and dial down how close your perspective aligns with reality of what's happening in your personal environment, in your personal world. And that can mean the difference between capitalizing on opportunity and getting smacked by that curveball we talked about that life throws at you and that you didn't see coming. Perhaps the time you took to study the map or even get on the computer and look at Google Earth and look at the roads around in your area and every once in a while just scroll down a street and go, okay, I'm going to take this street and see what happens, where the street on the map leads, and learn your neighborhood over time. Maybe you start learning the street names, you know, get your head up out of the looking at the dashboard. And when I say all this stuff, I'm not just telling you to do it. It's something that I work on and something that I know I need to work on, right? I'm projecting onto you, but looking up and not following the GPS and looking up over your dash and seeing what the street names are, seeing what the area looks like, that kind of stuff. Well, because you took the time to do all of that, right? And to kind of actually pay attention rather than drone out on your way home or last time you came, went into and from the store, right? If there's ever a traffic jam or something like that, maybe you shave 15 minutes off the, you know, having to wait around. Maybe you take a new route that you go, oh, wow, this is a really, really pretty drive and only adds a minute, but man, I really enjoy this drive. I might have to do this once in a while, right? That, again, that helps improve your life. It helps make things better for you, right? So maybe situational awareness is what prompted you to pump your brakes. I do that. When the light goes, don't just jump on the gas and sail out in the intersection. We've all seen the person running the red. I imagine at times we've been the one that wasn't paying attention so well when we've run the red. I know I have. Not recently. It's been a while, but, you know, it's happened in my life. Right? So you don't pump the brakes and you don't go barreling out in the intersection because you're situationally aware. Like, hey, it's got a tingle in my neck. Let me just sit here for a second. And when it comes to situational awareness, fortunately, it's a skill that you can practice daily. There's no special equipment needed, just a sharp, attentive mind. You just have to want to say, hey, I'm going to go in and examine how I would handle this, and then I'm going to work on peeling it back to find ways that I'm wrong, so that way once I know what didn't work so well, I might have a way that works better. So all you have to do when it comes to situational awareness to work on it over time, sit back, watch the flow of things. See how life unfolds. Catch how the nuances of people's reactions to things. Right? See what goes on. Catch the nuances of people's moods. Try to catch the nuances of your moods. Hey, why all of a sudden are you like, you know, I don't know. Maybe you're uptight. Maybe you all of a sudden you're more relaxed. Maybe we change throughout our day and throughout our lives. Well, see if you notice when you change, or if you say, ah, I've been in that funk or that thing for, you know, a day or a few hours or a few days. Try to go back and look through your days or your hours, whenever, and see if you can find out what were you doing when all of a sudden, what happened? What caused that mood shift, right? That's your subconscious trying to communicate with you, right? But go through, think about the problems that you know, that you worry about, that you're concerned with, and start thinking about how you would handle them. And maybe you go, I don't know. So then you start doing some research. What does Brian Duff at Mind for Survival say? What does the Red Cross say? What does, you know, whoever you believe in say? And start gathering other people's thoughts. Now you know something. Once you get to a certain point in your knowledge, what can you learn more to improve your situation? When you say, hey, I think I got this one down. Because once you get it down, what do we get back to? You're better prepared. It's a Dunning-Kruger effect, right? Once you start learning more, you start realizing where you're at in the big scheme of things and being prepared for something. And you get better at answering the what do I do questions. Number two is safety and security. Your safety and security always comes first. Safety is about giving yourself the ability and space to avoid problems. A wise old prepper, me, once said that a problem never encountered is a problem never encountered. I don't know, I'm a little Captain Obvious, Ranger Obvious there. But in other words, if you avoid a problem, you don't have a problem. That means rather than smashing the gas pedal when the light turns green at the intersection, you pause for a couple of seconds, you take a breath, just in case someone runs that red. And while you're paused, you can quickly scan to your left, your right, forward, look around, you can catch the guy, see what the guy booger flicker in the car behind you, see what they're doing back there. That's safety. That's you're erring on the side of caution there, right? You're trying to be safe before we get to security, not stepping on the gas pedal. I'll tell you another thing when it comes to intersections, safety is installing traffic circles. I love seeing the amount of traffic circles I see around the country now. Because they eliminate the potential for the highly dangerous T-bone collisions, the right impact collision as they're officially known, where cars are hitting at 90 degree angles and it's just all kinds of crazy kinetic energy getting launched into the people in the cars. And man, I've seen some terrible wrecks at those. When it comes to traffic circles, because everybody's coming in at an angle, any collisions you have are glancing blows, right? Like, yeah, you might have mucked up the quarter panels and the door or something like that, but you didn't T-bone each other. You're able to drive down the road and hopefully get lucky and your insurance figures it out and it works in your favor or something. So something like a traffic circle, that's looking proactively and like, how do we make things safer, right? In your case, maybe you go out and you look at some low-cost, low-visibility security upgrades to your home. Like, what do you do there? Like, you go out and you find some stuff that like, hey, I'm going to make my home more secure. You can do all kinds of stuff with that. So that's you being proactive. That's you, you know, making your home safer. You're turning your right impact T-bone intersection home into a glancing blow. In other words, you and your family, you're the car. You can weather events better because of what you've done. That was safety. Now, security is your capability to eliminate or recover from a problem that was unavoidable. Pulling over and calling 911 because the guy next to you smashed the gas pedal. He didn't wait the 2 seconds and got T-boned by the car that ran the red light. Right? That's what happens after our safety measures fail. But because you're a good prepper, you know you need to get 911 rolling because it was a really bad accident. And you get on that so that the people that can really do a lot, because, you know, unless you have a bunch of trauma gear with you and different stuff. I stopped once for a major accident on the freeway. I had gloves. I was able to hold this guy's head that got ejected from a car, but that's you're pretty limited. Getting 911 headed that direction, that's a really good thing. And so you as a preparedness-minded person know, like, yeah, we need to get 911 here real quick. And so you go make that happen. Security is that you have a really high-performing airbag system in your car. That's after the fact, right? All those efforts in the front have failed. Your security works out well when those security upgrades that you did at home includes reinforcing the master bedroom doors, replacing the door with a solid core door and reinforcing that door frame and the door. So that way you make an ad hoc safe room in your house that your family can retreat to if something bad goes on, if someone starts kicking on your door. So because you did that, because you leaned into it and took care of it and said, this is what I'm working on. When someone's banging on the door, trying to kick your door, and you can go on YouTube and you see these videos of people trying to kick people's doors in the middle of the night. And you gather them up and you go up there and you have a place that increases the safety of your family. So that works out well. Why all this matters is because feeling that way, feeling safe and secure, that's foundational to preparedness. Otherwise, we walk around terrified all the way. What's happening next? What's happening next? What's happening next? I mean, think about some of the animals that you see that anytime they see something, they're moving, right? Oh, that might be bad. I'm running from that. Yeah, that's not the life we want to lead. So that's why we need the second tip when it comes to things that you need to do to survive. We need to make sure that we maintain our safety and security. Number three, are emergency kit essentials. This is where we get in the gear stuff. Emergencies don't come up with warnings, or an emergency doesn't warn you that it's coming. They typically strike unexpectedly, and your emergency kit is your first line of defense against whatever's happening. And when your emergency kit is packed with the proper supplies, you're set up for sustainment. Like, hey, we got through the initial thing, but now we need to be on our own for a while because the system's buckled. Hey, the bridge is out. Nobody can get to us. We're going to need to sustain ourselves while things settle down and a new sort of normal happens. And so that's why we need to work on having emergency kits. And, that's what we need to have ready. And it's a good thing. Again, when people first get into preparedness, that's what they think of. Because at least then, even if you don't know how to use a tool, like if you have a flat and you don't know how to jack your car up, well, at least you hopefully have the tools in the car so somebody else can help you. At least if you get your basic preparedness needs together, you have it and you can even try to figure it out, right? And so it's not hard when we're talking about a week or two of food where you have this food. If you do it right, you don't even need to heat most of it up. And you're ready to go. So having a disaster supplies kit should include some essential items. And I imagine if you've been prepping for a while, you probably have some ideas of what you think is essential. But first and foremost, there might be other things higher on the survival pyramid or more foundational on the survival pyramid. But go with the easy one, non-perishable food and clean water for at least 7 days per person, right? And I know in the prepper world, I believe in that we should have months, if not years, of food on hand and ability to act independently without having any outside assistance. But for those that don't feel that way, that feel like, you know what, as long as I have enough for a week, I'm good. Well, that's a lot better off than having nothing. So starting with non-perishable food and clean water, for you and your family, shoot for about 2,000 calories a day. And I'm going to talk about that some more here. And at least about a gallon of water for drinking water per day. Actually, the adult male requires 120 ounces. We're 4 ounces shy of a gallon. An adult female is less when it comes to how much water we need a day. So shooting for a gallon might give you a tad extra. You should also have a good first aid kit. And you can go look on Amazon. There's a bunch of different first aid kits on Amazon. I like first aid kits that have stuff, medicine for, say, like gut problems, medicine, some Motrin, different things like that, some over-the-counter meds in it, along with some bandages. And just think about what you keep in your medicine chest and you might have to go look at. Maybe a pair of glasses or a magnifying glass and tweezers for splinters. Band-aids, all that kind of stuff. So go, you can get some pretty good pre-made starter first aid kits over on Amazon. And then having some advanced emergency medical supplies is always a good thing. And everybody talks about tourniquets, and I'm a big fan of having tourniquets. And you should probably get them and get them from a reputable source. Amazon, I kind of stay away from. I go direct to the manufacturers, typically on tourniquets, and whatever tourniquet floats your boat. I work for North American Rescue and have always used CAT tourniquets. I'm a fan of them. And there's a bunch of other tourniquets out there that can do a great job. Also having some bandages, some stuff to do some larger dressings, some more tape and like athletic stuff for if people have some more significant injuries, think about something that would be more than just Band-Aids and Motrin kind of thing. A multi-tool for repairs, and, you know, people kind of scoff at it, but a multi-tool with that knife, is it ideal? No, but it's a self-defense tool as well, right? So having that multi-tool that can truly be a multi-tool and do a bunch of different things for you in a pinch, be something that gives you some sort of advantage if you ever have to defend your life, then you have that there. A good flashlight. I like rechargeable flashlights. If you're carrying a brick to recharge your cell phone, if you're carrying one of those, you know, battery packs to recharge your cell phone, those can also recharge your headlamps and different things that are rechargeable. So I tend to look at those now so I can reduce the need for me to carry just random loose batteries that I have to swap out. You still have to carry a few on some things, but that gives me the ability just to replace those extra batteries that I carry with a brick mostly. Also, I like having a NOAA weather radio, and, you know, a local police scanner is not bad as well. If you can stay up to speed with the latest from the weather and what NOAA has to put out, and you know what's happening locally, that gives you a pretty good bit of information coming in. What is that doing? It's priming your OODA loop. It's priming your situational awareness. And that can be critical during emergencies. I mentioned the battery pack, having those extra batteries, because we depend on our electronics for so much. You got to try to make sure that you keep them usable and make sure that they're a tool that can, I mean, your phone, it has compasses, it has everything on there, right? So that's a great survival tool if you need it. If you're going out hiking, doing stuff, having a whistle signal for help, or, you know, again, if it's a major disaster and things really get messed up, that might be something you need to attract attention. Yeah. Your car ends up going off the side of the road or that kind of thing happens. I mean, you see these stories, all you got to do is be in tune and in touch with these stories. Dust masks to filter out air if there's a lot in the air. I think back to 9/11 and people were breathing all that stuff. A dust mask there would be perfect. Having some plastic sheeting with duct tape. That's my Northeast LA accent coming out. But having some plastic sheeting with duct tape for a temporary shelter is a great idea. As always, waterproof matches or a lighter. I am a fan of having local maps if you're a member of AAA, and AAA is a great thing that you can add if you're not a member to your PACE plan, if you can afford it. It's not really that expensive, but they help with spare tires and lockouts and gas problems, you know, if you run out of gas, all this stuff. And the AAA gives you free maps. So you can go to a local area, go to the AAA and get a couple of free maps, right? Another thing in your emergency kit you want to make sure is you have your personal hygiene items like soap, a toothbrush, dental floss, any essential medications. And lastly, you want to throw in either it's like a thumb drive, a flash drive, external, I don't know, a stick drive. I don't know what they're calling them these days. But something, or a waterproof container with hard copies of your important documents. I like having the hard copies. That way, no matter what happens, if I need my document, like I have to prove something about where I live or whatever the case may be, I have it and I can show it right there, right? And that could be insurance policies, whatever. But keep those in a waterproof container and make sure that you, if you have an emergency kit, make sure that you regularly update that kit. If you update any of your files, you know, go through it, make sure your batteries are all good, your electronics are working. If you, if you have your food in it, that your food hasn't expired or hasn't gone rancid because you left your kit somewhere that got hot or whatever. So, and you know, make sure that you replace any of your expired items with that. All right, and tip number four is making sure that you have the essential survival skills for critical situations. In my book, I talk about the capability formula and your ability, right? Knowledge, skill, and resources. So we talked about the resources that we just went over in the emergency kit. We talked about mindset and situational awareness, right? Got some knowledge, and on the front of that is mindset. Well, we also need to have the skills to be able to do the things that we might need to do, or at least have knowledge of, so we can tell others how to do it, that might make the situation better. Knowing how to effectively take action is crucial, right, during emergencies, because essential survival skills like first aid, fire starting, shelter building, navigation, And a lot of people, when it comes to navigation, think navigation is about wandering through the woods with a compass. That could be it. And how many of us navigate where we're going anymore? How many people make an effort to be able to get from point A to point B without following Siri or whatever the bot is telling you how to go? Turn right here, turn left here. How many of you try to memorize that? That's navigation. Knowing all that stuff, it can truly save your life when things get serious. I don't imagine most people go through life having a whole bunch of traumatic injuries happen around them. But it's that one time it might happen that knowing first aid and advanced first aid or different things can make a difference. Heck, the shelter building, while it's great when we talk about for survival, probably be fun to go out with your kids and do that too. They'd probably dig that. So here's a quick rundown of the skills that I think are important that can help keep you safe, help give you the confidence going into a situation when that question comes up, what do I do? Well, guess what? By going through and training on these skills, you're priming your OODA loop, you're priming your situational awareness, you're gaining experience, knowledge, and all that, and you're making yourself better able to go and deal with stuff. So the first one is just what I said first, first aid. Knowing basic and advanced first aid skills can help prevent further health complications, help, further injuries, can help stabilize things, can help get things better, and they can overall improve your situation. And to ensure that everyone has the best opportunity possible to keep life flowing blood going to their brain, because that's what it's about, folks. That's really the life and death thing, right? When our blood stops going to our brain and carrying oxygen to our brain, that's when we cash out. That's when it's all over. That's like, all right, it's over. You don't think anymore and, don't collect, don't pass go and all that. So in order to make sure that keeps happening, we all need to know basic life support, CPR training, and how to stop life-threatening bleeding. Again, you may go through your whole life never having to do CPR or never having someone get seriously cut that you had to jump in and know what to do. And if it ever does happen, this is like one, these are two of the areas where I think that the average person can do the most to save somebody's life. And if you're with your family most often, what's the odds that it might be one of your family members? Someone cut their hand at Christmas dinner, or cut their arm at Christmas dinner, chopping up a turkey or something like that. Learning basic and advanced first aid skills is also beneficial if we ever run into one of these long-term disasters. Because what happens? It's those little nicks, those little cuts, it's those little things that can cause bigger problems that you want to jump on in advance. You don't want people getting cellulitis and all that. Being able to treat blisters, right? If the power's out, if you're out trying to do stuff for a while and you haven't really done stuff by hand and you're getting blisters, well, got to know how to treat those blisters and stuff like that. And that's what you can get with first aid and advanced first aid and all that kind of stuff. So knowing that. Fire starting. So being able to start a fire can be important. And what is fire? Fire is energy. And it's energy that provides warmth, light, and it provides an additional source of heat for cooking food, for purifying water. That stuff's hugely important when it comes to survival. And fire in hard times, fire is also morale builder. Right? If you're down and feeling bummed out, like sitting there in the military, we called it Ranger TV. Getting a fire going and watching Ranger TV for a while, it's soothing. It's a good thing. And it's a great thing. It can be used as a signal if you're lost, right? Don't go lighting the whole forest on fire. You've been some California stuff going on there. Knowing how to safely start a fire using primitive skills is also, I think, kind of a meditative skill, right? That connects us with nature and the world around us. You go out there and you get down and you make your little teepee or whatever way you're starting your fire and you use some primitive skills. And I mean, heck, you go out there and light it with a match and get it going. There's something about getting a fire going and sitting back and listening to the crackling of it and all that stuff that's just soothing that I really love. And And so anyway, I think understanding how to build a fire is a really good skill to have. And it's kind of fun. You know, make sure the person's not a fire bug if you're teaching it to people. But other than that, next up is shelter, because exposure to harsh conditions can quickly lead to hypothermia, heat stroke, and other life-threatening problems. Your shelter doesn't need to be fancy, but it must protect you from the environment, both hazards of Mother Nature and living creatures. Now, if your home becomes unusable for whatever reason, I mean, we've seen it with the fires, we've seen it with earthquakes, floods, people are living in tents down in North Carolina still. And if your home is unusable, knowing how to create a shelter can provide protection from the elements. Knowing how to set something up that is set up right. How many times do you, you know, you may not, if you don't go out to the woods a lot, or if you don't go out and camping and stuff, you don't see like when people put their stuff up and it messes up. Well, if you don't have a practice setting up something and figured out the ways, because you did it the way you're not supposed to do it a couple of times. And if you haven't figured out how to set up a shelter by trying it and figuring your stuff out, well, it might be difficult the first time you do it. And so being able to know how to do that, so that way you can get something going to protect you and your family from the elements. I mean, that can mean setting up a tarp or setting up your car. Maybe you set up your car as like a little, you know, that's your rolling RV because a disaster hit. And now you're in your car for a little bit. Or shelter is, hey, you took the time to pre-plan and find a nice hotel that's away from the disaster zone that takes your dogs and your cats and everything else that you're going to haul with you over there. Another good thing that we talked about a little bit a minute ago was navigation and having the know-how to get to and from important places without a GPS can keep you from getting lost or delayed when it matters most. Because if your GPS is going and you try to jump off the highway or try to route around something that's, you know, going on in the city, you might have to turn it off because it keeps trying to tell you, turn here, because it's trying to reroute you through the course it wants. So having the ability to not have that happening and just be able to drive to where you need to go because you've taken the time to study the map and actually driven the side streets in your neighborhoods and expanded that over time to more and more. If there's ever a problem with your kid at school or at the mall or someone that you care about somewhere, you know, for whatever reason, the GPS decides to crash that day. Maybe whatever's happening, the big bugaboo, the disaster that's happening, is causing the GPS to go down. Like for some reason, your cell network's not working, whatever the case may be. You can still take care of your family because you know how to drive somewhere simply because you pulled your head up and you looked around and you made 5 and 10 minute efforts here and there once a week, twice a month, right? To learn your way around town without having to rely upon the dashboard telling you. Right. Learning how to travel by memorizing roads and routes, it forces us to interact with the world. It's that situational awareness thing. Keeping your head up, you get to see. And what are we as we learn our way around town? This is a good situational awareness lesson. As we're learning different road systems and roads we haven't been on before, what are we doing? We're observing our environment. And we're orientating to our environment, right? We're getting everything figured out. We're influencing, we're improving, we're expanding our situational awareness. So when that emergency happens and the freeway's backed up or the road's shut down, law enforcement has a road shut down, we don't need to try to punch it into the dashboard and Siri, into our console or phone, whatever. We just make it happen because we've already gone through it. We've been situationally aware. And because we're situationally aware, as soon as something happens, we are that much more likely to have an answer to the what do I do question. And the less time that you have in your screens and that we have off of our phones, I think that's good, probably good for the human spirit too. And good for, it's nice to be able to drive around and just in quietly drive and just look at the landmarks and look at the things around you. There's a lot going on. All right, tip number 5, right, of the things we need to do to make sure that we can survive is that this is the core of what we talked about a little bit ago. This is number 5 is hydration, sleep, and sustenance, right? Your body, our bodies have critical needs that simply can't be overlooked. And it applies double, especially during emergencies. Hydration, sleep, and food form the trio that sustains your energy, sharpens your thinking, and maintains your physical strength. And by prioritizing these essentials, making sure that, hey, do I have enough water to drink? Do I have enough food to keep me going? And am I able to get rest? Am I able to get some sleep so I can stay sharp? You'll ensure your body, you'll ensure your mind stay as capable and focused as possible so that you're ready for whenever that question comes, what do I do? Not only will you be able to answer the question, you'll be able to carry out and execute whatever that action needs to be. Now, we all know with water, right? That's a non-negotiable. Your body won't last more than a few days without it. Less if it's warm, you know, if it's warm out or you're being super active. We talked about earlier, and it's the general rule of thumb is that make sure that you store at least 1 gallon per person per day, right? Probably want to store a little bit more than that. You know, keep some simple purification tablets or filters on hand to ensure you always have clean drinking water, even if the tap stops flowing. Where I'm right at right now, I have a natural spring that bubbles up out of the ground. There's a spring house that I can go get water. It's going to probably be pretty clean. And then there's the creek. It's about a 10-foot across the creek. But there are cows and stuff all over along the, you know, this is farmland. So I don't know that I would want to go drinking out of that creek very much. Definitely going to boil it and definitely filter it. Probably through some ceramic filters that I'm using now. But what do you have in case that happens? So having a gallon plus a day stored away is a really good thing. Next, I mentioned it was sleep, right? Never underestimate the power of sleep. The lack of sleep quickly leads to impaired judgment, leads to slower reaction times, hallucinations, forced micro sleeps, and reduced overall resilience. I don't, but maybe, you know, maybe again, this is just me casting shade on all you based on my experience. When I get sleepy, I get cranky. And in the Rangers, man, we trained to experience sleep deprivation. That was one of their things. You want to put stress on people and see how they function under stress? Don't let them get any sleep. So that's what they would do. And so we trained to experience sleep deprivation, and you would get familiar with how it can cloud your thinking and impact critical decisions in stressful times, man. And so making sure you have a sleep strategy, even during a crisis, like you have a plan to sleep. That's a good thing. It's why it's in this tip, tip number 5. And it's crucial. That's why it's here with water and food. And speaking of food, although we can survive weeks without food, technically we can survive. Going hungry quickly weakens your physical and mental capabilities. And those are crucial when we're trying to figure out our way forward because something crazy is going on. So you should always try to keep some practical, nutritious, shelf-stable, and healthy foods on hand, such as you can have canned goods, protein bars, the canned beans, dried beans, rice, whatever calorie-rich snacks you can come up with. I prefer, when it comes to emergency food, to make sure that, like, my emergency on the PACE plan, primary plan, my alternate plan, my contingent plan, my emergency plan. When I get down to contingent and emergency, if I'm eating my contingency and my emergency planning, that means I've gone through my primary, which is my refrigerator and freezer. I've gone through my secondary, which is all the cans that I stack in the back of the cupboard and everywhere else. I've gone through my contingency. And I've probably eaten through all my spam and all my stuff that I actually have outside as my full on contingency reserve. And then I've gone through all my Mountain House and everything else. And now it's like, oh man, time to start figuring out how to grow food. And that I'm actually going to do that this year, but I still need to figure that one out. This whole growing food for city boy trying to figure out how to grow some food. Yeah, that's interesting. That's going to be a little bit. It's going to be something. We'll figure that out. So when it comes down to your, you know, what you have going, if I look at it as if I'm into my contingency and emergency food, that means my primary and alternates have failed, gone up in smoke, something, whatever's happening, like I'm down to my contingency and emergency. I'm going to start thinking at those points to make those where I don't have to cook any of that. That's, I can warm it up. I can do stuff with it if I want to cook it, but I can eat it. Spam, I can eat right out of the can. Corn, you can eat right out of the can. Figuring out what foods you can have like that, you know, protein bars, that kind of thing. So figure out what are the most nutritious options for you and your situation, dietary needs. And while it may not be what you care for, 1,000 calorie daily emergency food stockpile can be as simple as 5 items that you can purchase on Amazon that when you buy these 5 items total, they're about $20, give or take. You got 12 days worth of long shelf life emergency food for one adult. And so that's a can of Spam, a 4-serving pack of Idahoan mashed potatoes, a can of corn, and 2 like Kind bars. That's about 2,000 calories. That'll get you for a day. Now, if you're being really active, you might need a lot more. I mean, I think, what do they say? There's 2,000 calories in an MRE. And in the Army, when you're out doing stuff, you'd eat 3 of those a day. That's 6,000 plus calories you were getting, and you were burning weight because you're so active. So something to think here, you know, again, the 2,000 calories, that again, a can of Spam, a package of Idahoan potatoes, a couple of protein bars, and a can of corn, and you're pretty much at 2,000 calories a day. So it was food, sleep, and water. Number 6, tip number 6 is staying capable, because preparedness isn't a one-time event, right? It's a continuous practice. We always have to, we got to make sure our stuff isn't expired. We got to make sure the batteries are ready to go. It's something that you don't need to do it full time, but it needs to be done on a regular basis over time. And staying capable during emergencies requires ongoing effort, from having a clear, actionable plan that you've gone over in your head so that you have an answer. What's that? What's the plan? What's the thing you're going to do when the what do I do question happens? To maintaining your health as much as possible, being as healthy for your situation as possible, and regularly updating your supplies, you know, going to the doctor. So when it comes to all that, you can stay sharp, you can stay informed, you can stay ready to respond effectively whenever something crazy happens. You can be ready for that. And how do you do that? Have a plan. Being prepared means having a plan in place, knowing what to do in an emergency, and having the essential supplies to do what needs to be done. Next, under staying capable is making sure that you have current information. Having access to accurate and up-to-date critical information can help do what? Prime the OODA loop, so that way you can make the most well-informed decisions possible that might be split-second decisions, and you don't have a lot of time. You can't sit there and ponder it. You got to go. So what happens? All the preparedness ahead of time sets you up to make those effective split-second decisions. Also, what makes you capable is making sure that you don't have a bunch of expired stuff. And yes, there's always the debate, can I eat my can of expired stuff? You got to do what you got to do. But I think if you do your best before an emergency to make sure that you don't have any expired items around, then when the emergency happens, you can make that decision when it's real, not showing up to the emergency with a bunch of expired stuff on the front end, because preparedness ends when the disaster or the problem starts. So regularly checking and replacing expired items in your emergency kit can help ensure you have access to the essential supplies when they're needed that are still good to go. Remember, knowledge, skill, and resources. One of the metrics that makes up resources is what's the quality of the resource. Is this resource expired? Ooh, you're not as capable possibly as you were when it wasn't expired, just in case it's one of those things that if we take it at face value, it truly is expired and you can't use it. The next thing on being capable is having healthy habits. Maintain healthy habits such as trying to do regular exercise for you. Maybe regular exercise for you is walking to your curb. Maybe you're in a wheelchair and it's rolling to your curb, right? It's all relative to you. There's no, hey, we all need to be a 5-time Olympic athlete or some, you know, the most in shape Delta Force operator. No. It's being as healthy as you can for your circumstances. Try and eat a balanced diet, not the four food groups. You know what's healthy for you. We all know that putting the Doritos in our mouth at some point in our back of our head, we all know that, like, this is a bunch of chemicals. It's not really just like corn chip and somebody, you know, freeze dried some cheese and sprinkled it on the top. No, we know that's like, they're not great for us, right? So trying to have a good diet, right? Getting health checkups, good personal hygiene, doing stuff to try to keep your mind sharp and try to work through any issues that you have. All that can help you stay safe and healthy during an emergency. So that's being capable. And then number seven, when it comes to the seven tips to that everybody needs for survival, is community support and survival, right? Thriving isn't a solo sport. We are naturally social beings, and having support from others is essential. You hear me talk about this all the time. You can't do it alone. You can try, but the first injury, the first illness, the first, something didn't work out right, and it could all come crashing down. So support comes in the form of someone to help us when we get behind the power curve with something, or for us to help them. Our self-defined family of loved ones is the smallest form of community there is. Maybe your family is you and your significant other. That's it. Maybe there's a kid or two thrown in there. Once we go from individual, that's the smallest form of community that there is. It takes multiple families to make up a neighborhood. That's a geographical community with these families. And we can see how this extrapolates out, right? And while we define our community, our family is that smallest form. It's the community that provides us with resources that we may not have, provides us with skills that we may not have. Maybe it accentuates the skills and resources that we have. And it provides us at times with the emotional support that we all may need. The physical support. We talked about skills. Are you a doctor? Can you patch your leg? Do you have the EKG machine to check your heart? That kind of stuff. That's resources. That's skills. That's what comes with community. We all need that at some point. What also comes with community, just what we've been talking about, is family members. And it's important when it comes to survival, comes to thriving during difficult times, when it comes to relaying information within your family group, within your family there, is having a good communications plan that ensures all family members are safe and accounted for. That can help ensure everyone's sanity and safety in an emergency. That's critical because what typically happens? I mentioned it earlier at the beginning of this. Your cell phone starts blowing up. You're getting texts. It's ringing. You got all kinds of stuff going on. It's mayhem on your phone. How do we fix that? A family communication plan. Oh, there's a difficult thing happening. All right, well, this is what we've decided how we're all going to do it. Here's the phone tree. Whatever that looks like. That way you know where is everybody. And everybody's as informed as possible about what's going on, what they need to do next, where they're at. So you can keep track of people because what do I need to do? Well, what do you need to do maybe with the family communication plan? Figure out where everybody's at, what's going on, what's going on with everybody. Then I can make a plan about what we have to do. So those are the seven tips, everybody. The bottom line on all this is, of what people must have to survive, is you can't count on your survival to happen by chance. You know that already. I'm preaching to the choir because you're here. You're listening to this show. You're seeking other information, going to websites. You're looking for all this stuff. For survival to be successful, that's the result of thoughtful planning, preparation, and knowing is exactly what's essential. Sure, there's at times when luck comes along, but we all know how I feel about luck. You can't count on it. So don't plan on it. Make sure that you plan. Make sure you prepare. Make sure you know exactly what you need to survive. And by focusing first on cultivating that resilient mindset and sharp situational awareness on the front end, you'll start creating a rock solid foundation for every decision that follows. Stockpiling smart supplies, you know, not going over budget, not killing yourself, not going into debt, making sure that you're buying good stuff, make sure it's what's needed and you're not just buying stuff to buy stuff, you know, the practical gear, mastering critical survival skills, and ensuring that you're physically and mentally as capable as possible. All work together. All of these seven tips, they all work together to build the confidence, reduce the stress, and help you respond calmly when it matters most. Remember, preparedness isn't about fear, it's about empowerment. So take the next step today. Start right now. Start thinking about what we just talked about. Go back, listen to this again, share it with somebody, all that good stuff. And ponder some of this stuff and think about the what ifs. And by doing all this, by being prepared, making sure you have the stuff, the knowledge, the skills and everything, you'll be better prepared to answer the what do I do question. And with that, everybody, if you would, please, as I just mentioned, share this podcast with people that you think could benefit and that are open-minded, open preparedness-minded, and are looking for some ideas and thoughts and want to spend some time with us here on the Mind for Survival. I'd really appreciate that. And as always, stay safe, secure, and prepared. And never forget, you are just one prep away from being better prepared. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Mind for Survival podcast at www.mindforsurvival.com. That's www.mind4survival.com.